And so, yes, it's my pleasure to introduce Olivier Schiffman from CNRS, who will tell us about Yangians and the cohomological Hall algebra of Higgs sheaves on curves. And as before, we'll have a 25-minute session, a 5-minute break, and a 25-minute session, and then questions.
All right. Thank you very much for the invitation. I hope I get to see some of you very soon in real life. But in the meantime, I will try to entertain you with two-dimensional cohomological Hall algebras associated to curves. So as you will see, I have already written down everything. I wrote way too much, but we'll see how it goes. And the first part, which will probably last more than 25 minutes, is just try to give a general picture. What is a coha? Why do we care? What does it look like in examples? And then in the second case, I will focus, second part, I will focus on the case of T1. And try to be more precise. Okay, so input for a coha is just like for a usual Hall algebra. It's an abelian category. And for me, all these categories are going to be related to quivers or curves or maybe surfaces. So the global dimension of this abelian category is going to be 1 or 2. There are many cases of higher dimensional cohas that you want to consider, but I will not do it in this talk. So we assume that this category is nice enough that there's a moduli stack of objects. It may have lots of connected components according to the Grothendieck group. And then the main point of having an abelian category is that you can consider this Hecke stack. So Hecke stack is the stack that parameterizes all short exact sequences. And you can use it to define some kind of algebra structure on M. More precisely, you define some kind of convolution diagram where you have M cross M on one side, M on the other side, and this Hecke stack in the middle. And the maps, which I denote Q and P, are simply obtained by forgetting either the middle guy or the two extreme guys. So if you look at the fiber of Q, it looks like some X stack over the pair M double prime, M prime. Or more precisely, if you're in higher global dimension, it would be some kind of truncation of that. And if you look at the other map, so P, then the fibers are quad schemes. Okay, so in nice examples, Q tends to be kind of smooth and P is proper. So the idea of the game is try to exploit this Hecke stack to construct some actual algebras. Or categories equipped with some monoidal structure. And so how you do this, you would take some invariants or cohomology theories. You can even work directly with categories that you can plug your moduli stacks M into. And then this induction diagram induces some algebra structure on this F of M. So you can try to run it both ways, either from M cross M to M or from M to M cross M. In this talk, I will only be interested in the algebra, not the coalgebra structure. Usually, depending on the cohomology theory you're considering, one is better than the other. Okay, so some old and famous examples of that are the what's usually called Hall algebra, not cohomological Hall algebra, where you would consider just functions, functions on your moduli stack of objects. And you could either work over FQ or work for constructible functions. And this, you get this so-called constructible Hall algebra, or if you upgrade it to constructible category, then you get this so-called geometric Hall algebra that were considered by Ringel or Lustig. And they are known to produce quantum groups and so on. I'll come back to that later on. But now cohas, cohomological Hall algebras, appear if you try to do something a little bit different. You want to actually consider homology or Chow group or K-theory or any other oriented Borel-Mohr homology theories and maybe some other more fancy stuff. And they would give you various flavors of these cohomological Hall algebra. So coha, aha, keha, Obamas, you could call them, OBM, you know, in remembrance of good times. And these were defined, so I'm making it look like it's easy, but actually each cohomology theory requires some work. The precise context in which you are working matters. And so there are a bunch of people that have worked out various versions of these kohas. So I'm writing a list of some of them, not all of them probably, but okay. So it's one thing to define these kohas. I think it's another to actually compute them. And so I want to make a list of some guiding principles that you can use in trying to understand these kohas. So first, whole algebras. Let's start at the usual whole algebra. So as I said, and these guiding principles are mostly when t is equal to 1, so associated to quivers or curves. So the whole algebras look like something like a quantum group. More precisely, it's one half of a quantum group, positive half of a quantum group, associated to certainly algebra. That's something like a reductive, infinite dimensional, but reductive type Lie algebra. That's a very famous discovery of Hengel. Then another famous discovery of several people, including Kapranov, is that whole algebras of derived equivalent categories correspond to the same quantum group. So it's some kind of invariant of the derived category. But the little caveat here is that they might correspond to different halves. And that's actually very important. And this is an actual theorem by Tim Kramer. So again, this requires to be in D equals one situation. And then a little bit less famous, but I think very useful guiding principle is that suppose you start with your category A, which is of global dimension one, a quiver or curve, and then you cook up another category B, which will be of global dimension two this time, but whose moduli stack is the cotangent, or maybe truncated or whatever, cotangent stack of MA. So MB is cotangent of MA. Then the koha of B, so the cohomological whole algebra you can cook out of this moduli stack, which looks like, you know, coherent sheaves on the surface, will look like affinizations of the whole algebra, the usual whole algebra of A. So this is this guiding principle, and you might wonder why you get an affinization. And this is in some sense because if you look at just functions or perverse sheaves, constructible sheaves, you will miss the automorphism group of the objects. You will miss the stacky structure, which is detected when you consider homology, equivariant homology, or K-theory. Okay, so I want to give some illustrations of this principle. And what better place to start than the old, good old case of quivers? So let us start with QR quiver and consider A to be the category of representation of this quiver. This is a global dimension one category. And so the numerics that will be important in order to understand what Lie algebra lies behind and what quantum group lies behind is this famous Katz polynomial. So Katz associated to any quiver and any dimension vector alpha, a certain polynomial, which was later proved to be positive integral, which counts over a finite field the number of absolutely indecomposable representations. So it's a polynomial in the size of the finite field. And so what happens when you consider whole algebra of functions, and to get a better picture, you have to consider M over FQ, so counting FQ points of your moduli stack of representation of the quiver and making a whole algebra out of that. Well, you will see that what has been considered, well, the first thing that was considered is the so-called spherical whole algebra. So it's not the full whole algebra. It's a sub-piece generated by skyscraper sheaves, skyscraper functions of simple objects. And this turns out to be UQ plus of GQ, where GQ is the Katzmoody algebra associated to your quiver. And UQ plus is the positive half, the standard Katzmoody positive half of the corresponding quantum group. And in terms of Katz polynomials, a famous theorem of famous conjecture of Katz, which was proved by Tamás Hauszel, is that the character of this Katz-Moody-Lie algebra is given by the constant term of the Katz polynomial. So, okay. Now, what happens if you get if you are interested in the entire whole algebra, not just the spherical part? Then I want to write, it's a little bit cheating, but I want to say that this is the, again, positive half, standard Katz-Moody positive half of a bigger algebra, which is this G tilde Q. And this bigger Lie algebra is actually not a Katz-Moody algebra anymore, it's a Borchertz algebra. The Cartan matrix for this Borchertz algebra is infinite, and it counts cuspidal functions, so cuspidal elements in the whole algebra. So I don't want to dwell too long on that, but essentially you can prove by some general result that, that was done by Sevenhant and Vandenberg that the whole algebra is a Borchertz algebra, and then the generators, the simple roots for this big Borchertz algebra are almost by definition cuspidal elements. And then you can also prove that the character of this G tilde Q is given by the full Katz polynomial. And not just the constant term. So this is a very nice upgrade of Katz conjecture, which includes now the full Katz polynomial. If you look at the full whole algebra, you get the full Katz polynomial. Okay, and just to keep you motivated, if you're more geometry-minded, this G tilde Q is expected to be the Molyakov-Kunkov-Lie algebra associated to Q, which is constructed using Nakajima quiver varieties. Okay, so this was the whole algebra in the case of a quiver. Now let's look at the cohomological whole algebras for this quiver. So when I start with A being the representation of my quiver, then this B, which gives the cotangent to the stack of representation of the quiver, is this so-called preprojective algebra. So I'm not going to define it. We don't really need what it precisely is. I just want to state that MB is something like T star of MA, and it has the nice property that it's a CY2, essentially CY2. You can embed it into a CY2. As I said, it's global dimension 2. And if we look at its cohomological whole algebra, in homology and in K-theory, you need to involve work of Padurario, which we will speak about tomorrow. You can relate this full coha to, again, some enveloping algebra or some deformation of the Yangian of a certain Lie algebra. So which means it's a deformation of the enveloping algebra of the loops, positive loops, into some certain Lie algebra, which is called the BPS Lie algebra. So this first result was proved by Davison and Meinhardt. And you can compute the character of this BPS Lie algebra. And you see that it's the same character as this Borchertz algebra. So it's again given by the full Katz polynomial. So just numerically, you can check that from the whole algebra, you get a certain big Lie algebra, this G tilde Q. And from the cohomological whole algebra, you get the same Lie algebra, at least at the level of characters, except that the koha is the Yangian of this Lie algebra, instead of just the enveloping algebra of that Lie algebra. And you can guess the conjecture. It says that, the BPS Lie algebra is the same as the as this G tilde Q, this big Borchertz algebra, and is the same as this Molyakov-Kunkov Lie algebra. So as far as I know, these are not, there are three things you want to equate, and it's not known, at least to me, that this is the case. Okay, so you can easily guess from here what you expect from this k-theoretic whole algebra. It's like passing from C to C star. And so you instead expect to get the quantum loop algebra of G tilde Q. But this is still also conjectural. Okay, so there are some remarks. Why are these whole algebras interesting in the first place? Because one can prove that they act on the cohomology of Nakajima quiver varieties. So it's well known that the Katsumudi algebra, or the loop Katsumudi algebra, acts on the cohomology of Nakajima quiver variety. But actually, what really acts is this G tilde Q. So it gives you something bigger than you expect. Okay, what is my favorite example? Favorite example is the CY example, Calabi-Yau example. So you start with Q being the Jordan quiver. Then the representation of Q, you can think of it geometrically as torsion sheaves on A1. And the whole algebra of Q is known to be isomorphic to UQ plus of GL1 hat, so the quantum Heisenberg algebra, positive half of quantum Heisenberg algebra. Yes. And what is the representation of the preprojective algebra? Well, this is, again, torsion sheaves, but now on A2. And the koha of this is known to be the affine Yangian of GL1, which is exactly what you expect. Or it could also be called the Yangian of GL1 hat. And in this k-theoretical version, what you get is, you could say, the quantum loop algebra of GL1 hat, which is this so-called elliptic whole algebra. And what is nice about this elliptic whole algebra, and I'm mentioning this because I want to use it a bit later on, is that there's an action of SL2Z. Or maybe more precisely, if you want to include the central character, there's an action of the braid group, B3, on this elliptic whole algebra's algebra automorphisms. Okay, so this is an example of useful algebras. So they've been used in certain study of moduli space, numerical invariance, enumerative geometry of moduli spaces of sheaves on surfaces by a bunch of people that I listed here. Negutz has a bunch of papers on these in particular, and a generalization of this picture. Okay, so this was my illustration in the context of quivers. Now I want to move to the context of curves. And one reason to do this is especially this last Calabi-Yau example. So.
Olivia, I have a question.
Sure.
Your coherent sheaves, are they supposed to be supported at the origin?
It's just a matter of renormalization, but here I pretended they're not, yes. And I'm looking at...
quite.
Yes. So this GL1 here would be starting degree 2, maybe. But yes, this is the heuristic part, but I'm not being very precise about in which degrees the generators live. Okay, any other question? No. All right. Okay, so why am I interested in these kohas? Or K has, especially this one, it's because, as I said, it encodes pointwise modifications on the surface. So you modify a sheaf on the surface by a torsion sheaf at a point, if you modify it pointwise. And this is the algebra that kind of encodes all the modifications, the algebra of modifications, the Hecke operators of modifications of your coherent sheaf at a point. And one might also be interested in understanding what happens when you modify your coherent sheaf along a curve. And this is exactly where this cohaz of curves will appear. So, okay, so now I forget about quivers, and I consider the case of coherent sheaves on a curve, where X is smooth projective of genus G. This is still in dimension one. And in this case, the category B, which will give the cotangent to the moduli stack of coherent sheaves, is going to be the Higgs category, category Higgs sheaves. Okay, so let me give some examples of usual whole algebras first, and then I will state natural conjectures for the cohomological whole algebras of these categories. So when X is equal to P1, it's an old theorem of Kapranov and Baumann-Cassell that this spherical whole algebra is the positive half of SL2 hat. Now here there's a little subtle point, important subtle point, is that this positive half here is this Drinfeld positive half. It's not the standard positive half. So I will come back to this in the second part of the talk, but it's important to point that it's not the usual positive half. And if instead of considering the spherical whole algebra, you consider the entire whole algebra, which is something that I'm doing here, then you get UQ plus of GL2 hat. So you add one more generator in the Cartan, and because it represents the H2 of P1, then it is in degree two. Okay, so this is already a nice fact about what coherent sheaves on P1 have to do with quantum loop algebras. Now, if we move to the elliptic curve, then I look at the spherical whole algebra. And this is known to give this elliptic whole algebra. This is where the name comes from. And this also explains why this SL2Z is acting, because SL2Z, or the break group, is the derived group of, is inside the group of derived autoequivalences of an elliptic curve. Okay, and then if you want to consider just not just the spherical whole algebra, but the entire whole algebra, then you have to take a bunch of copies of this elliptic whole algebra, and as many as the cohomology of the curve. And this is a work of Fratzilla. Okay, and then when G is bigger than one, all I can offer is some vague conjecture. Again, it should be some deformation of a certain, so the quantum group of some Lie algebra G tilde G. And this Lie algebra here should really be thought of as an object in the category of GSP 2G modules. Why is that? It's because there is a choice for the curve. So the before, in the case of quivers, the only thing you could choose if you want is the finite field. If you fix the quiver, the only remaining choice is the finite field. In the case of a curve, you can choose which curve you choose, or which curve to pick. And so this choice is reflected in the veil numbers of the curve. And the veil numbers of the curve, you should think of them as a conjugacy class of the Frobenius, I mean, as a character of the Frobenius, which is an element in GSP2GC.
Would it be okay to take a break fairly shortly, Olivia? Is this a natural?
Yep. Yeah, right here. I have 1 more minute. I'm going to rush like I've been doing since the beginning, unless you stop me.
No, carry on.
So all I want to say is that there is a certain Lie algebra, G tilde G, that I don't really know. But I expect that the whole algebra is just a quantum enveloping algebra of that Lie algebra. And it should be a Lie algebra in the category of GSP2G modules. So what do we expect? We expect that the cohomological whole algebra of the category of Higgs sheaves on X, so that really corresponds to modification on the surface along a curve. That would be X embedded into the surface. You expect that this is the affine Yangian of G tilde G. And in the K-theoretic setup, you expect that it's the quantum loop algebra of G tilde G. And what plays the role of these quantum parameters? Now, again, there are G plus one parameters, not just the one as there were before. It's because we have equivariant parameter, which is the usual one, dilation along the fibers. I take the cotangent stack of something, so I have always the C star acting along the fibers. But here I also can consider the action of the mapping class group on these cohas, and actually the quotient acts. So this is where you recover this SP2GC. In the usual whole algebra business, it was veil numbers, and in this coha business, it's just the action of the mapping class group. Okay, I think I can stop here. It's supposed to be lighter. Yeah, so the second part is supposed to be a little bit lighter, I hope. I hope I will succeed. Okay, so as I said, it's one thing to define the algebra, it's another to actually compute them. It's also one thing to guess what the answer should be, and it's also another to actually work out the computations. So first case in this context of curves, first case that you want to consider is just the case of genus zero, so P1. So I take X to be P1, and A is my category of coherent sheaves on P1, and B is the category of Higgs sheaves on P1. And I will just work with Borel-Mohr homology, and actually T equivariant Borel-Mohr homology. So as I said, I always have the C star that acts along the fibers of this cotangent bundle map. And then I also have another C star, which is loop rotation, because I'm on P1. So I have two C stars. And there's this cohomological whole algebra of Higgs sheaves on P1 is bigraded, the rank and the degree. And there are two equivariant parameters, epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and let me just denote this by y+. So, because the function whole algebra, as we saw, is uq of gl2 hat, we expect y+ to be related to the affine Yangian of gl2 or sl2. So, I'm using the notation sl2 here because it's a notation that is used in the literature. But really, I think that for affine Yangians, there's no difference between SL2 and GL2, or maybe a one-dimensional difference. That would be kind of irrelevant. Okay, so this is just according to the philosophy that I described before, where in the case where B is something like the cotangent stack to A, and so we expect this coha to be the loop algebra of the coha of A. Coha of B is the loop algebra of the whole algebra of A. Okay, so a few words about what this affine Yangian of SL2 is, actually. So it's given by some generators and relations. And the generators are the EIL, HIL, FIL, where I is 0, 1, because SL2 hat is this rank 2 Kac-Modili algebra. And L greater or equal to 0 stands for this loop parameter. So you should think that EIL looks a little bit like, let me try to do this. EIL is something like, so it would be E S power L if I is say 1, and it would be F S power L plus 1 if I is 0, right? Inside. SL2 hat bracket S. What am I saying? Yes. Sorry. It This is FT, where SL2 hat is SL2 TT minus 1. Okay. And here I'm just considering, yes, and you can guess what F is. So here I'm just considering Y plus to be the positive half of this affine Yangian. So it's the so-called Kac-Moody positive half. I'm taking loops, positive loops with values in the Kac-Moody half. Okay, so there are two interesting subalgebras inside this affine Yangian. First of all, there is the usual non-deformed U of SL2 hat, which is when you take all the modes to be zero. And actually, this should be just a positive half. And then you can also take a certain algebra of operators, which is the adjoint action by this loop Cartan. So I want to use this in order to generate y out of y0 plus. So you can think, let me try to go artistic here. You can think that, so here I have my plane, SL2 plane. So I have my root system. Okay, these are my three roots for three lines of roots for SL2 hat. And then I have this S direction. That goes like this. And H tends to move you up, right? Acting by H moves you up in this S direction. So H up moves you up. And so H applied to Y0. Y0 is this ground floor. So H applied to Y0 generates Y. It's a subspace that generates the entire Yangian. And so the theorem that's joined with Vassereau, and that is still in progress, to be honest, good progress, but still in progress, is that this affine, this coha B, so this Y plus, bold Y plus, is isomorphic to the subalgebra of Y generated by H, but this time not Y0 plus. So maybe I should say Y plus. So H, I should have added H applied to Y0 plus generates Y plus. So instead of this, we want to take, instead of the usual y0 plus, we want to take this Drinfeld positive half. So if I really try to go artistic, I would say instead of, let me not try to go artistic, but instead of taking a certain positive half in this base plane, ground floor, I take the loop positive half. So it's some kind of double loop subalgebra. So a corollary of this is that Y plus contains two copies of this affine Yangian of GL1. And also for any K in Z, Y plus contains a copy of this usual Yangian of SL2. So let me try to describe how this works. So this is a projection to this Y0 plane, if you want. And so for any integral slope, I can restrict my coha to the semi-stable Higgs sheaves of a certain slope. And this category of semi-stable Higgs sheaves will give me just a usual copy of Yangian of SL2. And then if I restrict to torsion Higgs sheaves, then what I will get are two copies, because H star of P1 is of dimension 2, two copies of this affine Yangian of GL1 hat. So I'm kind of gluing two copies of the affine Yangian of GL1 hat along a whole family of affine, of Yangians, usual Yangians of SL2. Okay, so in the case of a K-theoretical whole algebra, you can expect a similar picture. Now you have to replace this affine Yang-Yen that is sitting in this vertical line by this elliptic whole algebra. And actually, the presentation that is good in these terms was found in this case by two physicists, Munzer and Zegers. So what I want to point out also is that there are two copies of this affine Yang-Yen of GL1 hat. And this is why it should be called GL2 instead of SL2, because these two copies are really the double loops in the Cartan, right? And the diagonal matrices, you take double loops. And this gives you two subalgebras. And so why this should be interesting is that now we can have a precise statement that Y of SL2 hat, at least we know exactly what is the and how this Lie algebra, this affine Yang-Yen of SL2 hat should act by modification along P1s, embedded P1s on some curves inside some surfaces. So you can think of ALE spaces and things like this. Okay, so a few more minutes. How much time do I have left? 10 minutes? 13 minutes, no?
Okay. Sorry, a little bit more than 10 minutes.
Okay, perfect. So let me just say a few words about the idea of the proof. So not very surprisingly, we want to use this derived equivalence. So we have derived equivalence between coherent sheaves on P1 and representations of this Kronecker quiver. And in this case, it's known that the cohomological whole algebra of the Kronecker quiver, I mean, the pre-projective algebra of the Kronecker quiver, is the usual positive half of this affine Yang-Yen of SL2 hat. So we want to understand how this, what this tilting equivalence does at the level of cohas. So how we do this? Well, we do it in some kind of taking a suitable limit. So if you look at this picture, this part here is the Kac-Moody positive half of the ground floor. And this is the Drinfeld positive half of the ground floor. And to go from one to the other, I apply a certain break group element, a lattice, a generator of the lattice part of the extended break group of SL2 hat, I mean S2 hat. Affine S2. So this break group element, it sends things in the negative half up and things in the positive half down, and it preserves all the things in the Cartan loop. And so we want to understand how to implement this kind of limit. So so algebraically, we can do this in this affine Yang-Yen using a break group action that was built recently by Codera. So the Codera showed that the break group acts on this affine Yang-Yen of SL2, and we want to take some kind of limit. So this is kind of clear algebraically what we want to do. And geometrically, what we want to do is we want to relate again these cohas for rep Q, rep PQ and Higgs P1 using some BGP kind reflection functors. So let me recall for you the structure of this so-called Auslander-Heighten quiver of P1 and the Kronecker quiver. So maybe it's easier to think in terms of coherent sheaves on P1 for some people, maybe better for others to think in representations of this Kronecker quiver, but let's do it for P1. You have all the classes of line bundles. These are all the classes of line bundles. So this could be, maybe this could be O, O of 1, O of 2, O of 3, and so on, O of minus 1, O of minus 2. And here you have the torsion sheaves, which come in families, and they're non-rigid objects. So this is one heart of this derived category, which corresponds to coherent sheaves on P1. And then another heart of this derived category, corresponding to representation of this Kronecker quiver, Here you have the so-called pre-projective component. Here you have the regular component, and here you have the pre-injective component. And we want to pass from one to the other. So, we can use this. We have this BGP reflection functor, or we can use, if you prefer, tensoring by O of one or O of minus one. That acts in the following way. So it pushes on this side, and it takes some of this side. So you see that in the limit, indeed, if you apply this to rep Q enough times, then you would, in the limit, converge to Koch P1. Okay, so we have some nice process at the level of categories, therefore at the level of stacks, and by functoriality at the level of Kohas. And then we have one nice thing, which is algebraically in terms of this break group action. And so we have to equate the two. So we have to show that the action of this BGP functor on the Koha is the same. This geometric action of the BGP functors is the same as the algebraic one. So you have to make this a little bit more precise. So maybe I'm slightly running a little bit out of time. Let me just say that, let me not describe this diagram in too much details, but why is it not obvious? It's not obvious because in essence, what this means is that you're going to look at certain open substacks of the stack of, say, representation of the pre-projective algebra. And you want to show that certain subquotients of this whole algebras are mapped onto each other by the action of these break group elements. And the problem is that these open substacks do not have algebra structures. So you cannot, they don't have a canonical algebra structure. This is a difference between the usual whole algebra and this Koha, is that these open substacks do not possess a natural Koha structure. So here's the conjecture that you can write for any quiver. And I want to say that this is very analogous. So people who are used to working with canonical bases will notice that statements like this, saying that the BGP functor essentially descends at the level of whole algebra, so this break group operators, this is a well-known result of Lustig. So Lustig proved that they were compatible with canonical bases, and the BGP functors are, because they're geometric enough, they're compatible with canonical bases. So so in the context of usual whole algebra, this theorem is a well-known result of Lustig. Something that's a little bit closer is in the context of semi-canonical bases and functions on this, constructible functions on this pre-projective, nilpotent pre-projective stack. Now this is a theorem of Baumann. And somehow we managed to prove this conjecture if Q is a finite type, and a weak form of this conjecture, which is enough for us, if Q is of affine type. So if you do this, this is the kind of essential step that allows you to deal with each of these operations, action by T and one BGP functor, and then you have to take the limit in a suitable way, but that's not so difficult. Okay, so I have a few more minutes. I wanted to say a few words about what we want to do next. So there are two natural directions in which you could go. One is go from this conical quiver to any affine quiver. And now this could be useful to study maybe some kind of AGT type enumeration problems for sheaves on ALE spaces or resolution of Kleinian singularities, because now this Kohas would encode the action of modification along P1s and maybe even along chains of P1s. So you could imagine that this can also be useful in the more general context where you have Calabi Yau, two or three and certain divisors, hyperplanes maybe, and you want to understand modifications along these hyperplanes. So this is one of the main motivations for studying these cohorts of curves. But then there's just this object that I really wonder about is what happens when you move from coherent sheaves on P1 to coherent sheaves on an elliptic curve. Then if you follow the same logic, if you fix a slope, any rational number, then what you get is something like torsion sheaves on this elliptic curve. And if you consider the cohomological whole algebra of torsion sheaves on a curve, what you get is something like this elliptic whole algebra. So it would mean that the cohomological whole algebra of Higgs sheaves on an elliptic curve would contain a bunch of affine Jungians or elliptic whole algebras, one for every slope. And altogether, you expect that they would generate some kind of Jungian deformation of the enveloping algebra of what some people call triple loop algebra, or I think it's much nicer, pagoda algebra. So I found this in some paper of Mironov, Morozov, Zenkevich, some physicists, who kind of expected that such an algebra would appear in some context that are just a sequence of letters and words for me, unfortunately. Numbers, letters and numbers. Six, there's a six somewhere, 6D something. Okay, and just to finish, so the elliptic whole algebra has an action of SL2Z, if you remember well. So along each of these slopes, for every slope, you get an action of SL2Z. But then looking at this picture, it's obvious that there is also a global action of SL2Z, which permutes this horizontal plane. And so altogether, you expect that they generate some SL3Z. So I expect that this Calabi-Yau setup is the nicest one and should produce some big Lie algebra, this pagoda-type Lie algebra that has an SL3Z symmetry, maybe some break group version of this SL3Z. But all the techniques that we have so far, this relation to quivers, this is not going to cut it. We need some more ideas to try to understand precisely what this algebra is. Okay, so thank you all. I'm sure I was very, very, very quick. But at least you can look at the notes.
Okay, thank you very much, Olivier. our remote applause or mute applause is happening now. Right. Do people have any questions? I'll try and unmute people as they do.
Yeah, I have some kind of question related to my previous question. If we stick to the surface as a cotangent bundle to the curve, which is kind of geometry underlying of you have said, you can think of this cotangent, the total space of this cotangent bundle as a divisor in something three-dimensional. Yeah, of course, the whole thing is a three-dimensional story, but you can look infinitesimally. You can think that you have this cotangent bundle with certain multiplicity. And so what will be the corresponding coha?
I would guess it would be related to that one.
Yeah, but the question is in what way? Yeah, it should be, but it's not really something three-dimensional. You do not need to use a sheaf of vanishing cycles at first glance, but on the other hand, it's not purely two-dimensional because you can think that you have a third variable, like x, y, for your surface, and the variable z, which is nilpotent. So then it's a mixture between two.
There's one paper, the one paper I know about that, you wrote with several people.
Yeah, but I'm not satisfied with it. This is why I'm asking you. Yeah, I'm not satisfied.
So you could try to relate, say, torsion sheaves with rank n sheaves on the surface, something like that, right? This is what you're saying. Torsion sheaves on this threefold supported on this divisor could try to relate it to higher rank sheaves on the surface and do this mm-hmm. Koha business there. I don't have a better answer. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
There's another question just asking how the spherical Hall algebra is defined, Olivier.
Which one? Representation of quiver or coherent sheaves on the curve? Let me do both.
Yes.
So, spherical Hall algebra of the quiver is the subalgebra generated by the characteristic function of simple objects. This is a simple representation of Q.
Olivia, maybe I have one more question. So when you speak about Higgs sheaves, so basically geometrically this means that you have a cotangent bundle and the compact spectral curves. Now, if that's really a thing which I'm interested in because we are doing this stuff with Roma Fedorov and my son, if you consider a Higgs bundles or sheaves with singularities, for example, like parabolic Higgs bundle, so then it's no longer cotangent bundle, and it's no longer, for example, for the regular singularities, it's no longer collabial because it's not the cotangent bundle. It's a total space of the canonical sheaf twisted by the divisor. Yeah. If
right.
Yeah. And what to do then? I mean, is your can your construction be upgraded?
I would guess so.
Yeah, I would too. But I haven't
studied that. But so the first thing you could do is parabolic P1s, and in some cases this would be. Again, affine quiver. So for parabolic P1s of finite type, I'm pretty sure it's the same answer. This formalism will work because you can also relate it to quivers. Mm-hmm. But for the others, I would guess it should work, but I haven't studied that.
Okay, thank you.
So I can finish answering this question. So it's generated by the simples, and at least if Q is acyclic, you can also say it's generated by the constant function on each of these components, MD, D in NI. So maybe this gives a better motivation. It's whatever is generated by the constant functions on all these moduli stacks. When you multiply them, you get some more complicated things, but you don't get everything in general. And if you're on a curve, then you can do the same thing. It's generated by 1RD. Well, maybe again, it's the same. Constant functions on all RD, where R is greater or equal to zero and D is in Z. So again, connected components of the moduli stack. You take the constant functions and see what they generate.
Okay, great. Well, let's let's finish there and thank Olivia again.